Hello and welcome to DeveloPod, the podcast from the IATEFL Teacher Development Special Interest Group. My name is James Taylor, and on today's episode, we're going to feature an interview that Christian has done with Sandy Millen. Now, we decided to interview Sandy as part of our Future of Teacher Development strand that we've been covering for the last year. And the reason we wanted to interview Sandy is because she's occupies a very interesting position. She's a freelance ELT consultant, she's a teacher trainer, she's a methodology writer and editor, she's an experienced teacher and manager, she's a podcaster, and she's an IATEFL ambassador. So we wanted to speak to Sandy to get her particular take on this interesting time in teacher development. I'll pass you over now to Christian and Sandy.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world. So I'd like to welcome Sandy Millen to the virtual recording studio. Welcome, Sandy.
Hi, Christian.
Hi. Thanks so much for joining us. Perhaps you could start with your background. I think people may know you. Well, quite a few people may know you through your prolific blogging work, but perhaps you could tell us a bit more about where you find yourself at the moment and your particular interest in English language teacher development.
Okay, so I'm based in Reading in the UK, and I moved back here 2 years ago. But prior to that, I spent most of my career working in private language schools, largely in Central Europe. The biggest chunk of time was in Poland, where I was a director of studies at an international high school there. Mm-hmm. During that time, I have been a teacher, a manager, a director of studies, and a teacher trainer. And you mentioned my blog. So I started that in my third year of teaching. I discovered Twitter at that point, and I discovered the teaching community on there, which is where I met you and many of the other people that are involved in TDSIG. It's where I first learned about IATEFL. And I started my blog because I saw that some of the people on Twitter were doing that as kind of a long form way of reflecting on their teaching. And I found that I loved it. It just grew and grew. And then I've been doing it for over 10 years now, and nearly 1,000 posts in that time, some of which are very short, some of which are much longer. And that's probably driven a lot of my interest in ELT teacher development, because I've got so much about online from my online professional development, from my blog, from reading other people's blogs, from interacting on Twitter, and now increasingly on LinkedIn, just learning from people from very different contexts. As I say, mine was mostly private language school teaching in Europe, but then being able to learn from people from all over the world, from state schools, from universities who are working by themselves, and all of that kind of over time has built up my confidence to be where I am now in terms of running my own teacher training courses, marketing myself online, and continuing my own development in that way, basically.
Wonderful. Is it fair to say you're the queen of bloggers, or is that a title?
That's a lovely statement. Thank you very much. I think I'm increasingly turning into the old lady of bloggers, because I've been doing it for quite a long time now. And a lot of the people who were doing it when I started have kind of dropped out. I think I'm one of the people who's kind of clinging on to it.
I think we've both gone grey in the time we've known each other, right?
Yes, exactly.
Fortunately, it's just published on audio, so our viewers can't see that.
Yes.
So what would you say are the main ways in teacher development has changed in the last few years? What are the main ways in which teacher development has changed?
Okay, so I think, like everything else within teaching, I think the pandemic has been the massive upheaval, because I think it showed everybody, all teachers, that they needed to develop. And I think a lot of people started to develop themselves during the pandemic in a way that they had never done before. They may have waited for institutions to provide development, or they may not have done anything in the way of developing in their careers. And then that shock of suddenly having to teach online, suddenly having to do something new, was both a positive and a negative shock. For some people, it showed them the gaps in their knowledge, and that they weren't able to adapt to that new teaching situation easily. It was a huge challenge. And for other people, I think it provided a huge kind of bolt of boost of adrenaline, for example, that suddenly they realized how much fun it was to be learning new things, even in the midst of this, this global pandemic, that people were suddenly fired up with enthusiasm about learning how to do this new thing. And I think that is still a couple of years down the line from the worst of the pandemic. I think that's still there to some extent within teacher development, that people are still enthusiastic about wanting to develop, about wanting to learn. So I think that's one of the major things.
Do you think they've become more independent, more self-reliant in that respect?
Yeah, I think so. And this is partly because that I think some people realized that their institutions couldn't provide the development that they needed, that they needed to seek it in a wider range of places. I think the communities online have been growing for a number of years. I mean, I certainly wasn't an early adopter, but I was fairly early on in 2009, 2010, and those communities have just grown and grown. But I think that they, in the last couple of years, I think a lot of people have started to access those communities that wouldn't have done it before, that would have been waiting for their schools to develop them, or that would have waited, until some crunch point came. And then that crunch point was the pandemic, and they went, oh, development is fun, it's interesting, it's something, but it's something that can help me in my career, it can help me to be a better teacher. And I think for some people that gave them that renewed interest in teaching as well, that's made people want to carry on as teachers if they've managed to get through that challenging time. Yeah, and I think the other way that TD has changed is in the social media that people are using. So I mentioned that I started with Twitter. That was my platform of choice. And over the last 2 or 3 years, particularly, a lot of people have moved off Twitter for various reasons, political and otherwise. But it was already reducing as a community because people were moving over to other social networks. So I'm still mainly active on Twitter, on Facebook. But I'm a latecomer to LinkedIn. LinkedIn has huge teaching communities now, and I think that's where a lot of discussion is happening, with slightly older teachers, not in a bad way, but so I'm nearly 40 now. I think people in my generation are comfortable on LinkedIn, and that feels like a good place to develop for those teachers. For younger teachers, they're developing in the social media that they're comfortable in, that they're used to. So there's huge communities on Instagram. There's a massively growing teaching community on TikTok. And those of us who are a bit older, we're not necessarily following that social media. And so each social media community has its own norms. It has its own groups of communities on there, basically. It has its own, they'll have distinct features as a community, the TikTok teachers or the Instagram teachers or the LinkedIn teachers. And I think that's an interesting thing, is working out where the crossover is, what can each group learn from the other groups as well, I think.
How is that happening, that collaboration between different social groups?
I don't think it is at the moment, honestly. I think it depends on if somebody's using two platforms. So as I say, for me, Twitter and LinkedIn, then I will share things on both platforms, and I will cross share. So something that I see on LinkedIn, I might share on Twitter and vice versa. And I think that's where the sharing is happening at the moment, is if somebody's using two platforms. But maybe that's something that can be more organized in the future, that could be more structured, that we can look at how can me as the Twitter LinkedIn generation, how can I communicate with the Instagram TikTok generation, and vice versa. How could what can they learn from us as well with the communities that we've developed.
And I just published yesterday, as I was saying to you before, an episode with Silvana Richardson. She was talking very much about sustained collaboration within groups, and that's, in her opinion, what's necessary for long-term growth. What would you say are the themes Within those collaborative groups on, say, LinkedIn and Instagram.
Yeah, I think I would absolutely agree with Silvana that it is that sustained professional development because, or it's the sustained communities, because that's certainly what I felt. I say I started with Twitter and blogging in 2009, 2010, and a lot of the people that I was talking to then are the people that I still talk with now. I've built up my professional life as they've built up their professional lives as well. And I think that. I think that ability to grow with your community and to learn from your community, I think, is really important. And I think that's when I'm talking about professional development, about teacher development, that's really what I emphasize all the time, that it's about your network, because you never know what skills you're going to learn, or you're going to need. But if you have the network, then when you're missing a skill, you can always go and ask somebody, you know, where can I learn about this? Who can I learn about this from? And so I often say myself that I can't necessarily do everything, but I can probably find somebody who can. And yeah, so I think that's this growing sense of we can't do everything by ourselves. We need to learn from other people, I think, is one of these things. And another one is about balancing mental health and well-being with development. So recognizing that we need to have time off to develop as well. It's not, you know, there's no point working all week and then spending all weekend on social media, on blogging. That's certainly something that I used to do, because without having the gaps of time completely away from it to process the information, it's like you're kind of trying to add water to a sponge that's already full. You need time to kind of let some of that water drip out, let some of it. You know, that's a bad metaphor. I can't continue with that metaphor, but you need some time to relax and to have mental space to be able to take on more information. And so I think that awareness of mental health is definitely grown as well.
To allow the tofu to what's the word to infuse, as it
Yeah, exactly.
were. Those lines, I can't find a useful metaphor either. So, sorry to come back to Silvana, but it was quite interesting listening to her, and she was talking about the fact that maybe we've moved away from the core elements of VLT in English language teacher training. In as much as we look at diversity and inclusion and mental health, we look at the environment and all of these very important issues. However, perhaps we've moved away from the core themes, which are the basis, the foundation of our industry in terms of content and pedagogy. In terms of those two things, what would you say are the themes that you see, or have seen recently in terms of teacher development on those social networks?
Yeah, so I think again, I agree with Silvana that, but I think that depends on who the people are who are doing the development. So I think it's true that somebody who's been in the profession for a while, like me, like Silvana, those are the things that we become interested in because we've got those foundations already. But when I'm teaching pre-service teachers, when I'm teaching CELTA teachers, when I'm working with brand new teachers, so when I was working in Poland, it was first and second year teachers, the teacher development focus becomes collecting activities. It becomes, you know, which activities, but I don't think this is a new theme. I think this is an existing theme as a survival teacher in your first couple of years of teaching. It's about building up your toolbox. And I think there's a lot of room for people to pursue their development in terms of building up activities, learning about basics of teaching reading, teaching speaking. There are some things connected to classroom management that happen after your initial teacher training, but I think we don't necessarily do enough connected to classroom management, because I think that's one of the main problem areas for teachers, especially if they're working with young learners or teenagers, and building up their confidence in terms of teacher presence within the classroom and building their identity as teachers. You know, are they an authoritative teacher? Are they a more hands-off teacher, what is their personality within the classroom, for example. And I think people do develop in those areas, but we as more experienced teacher trainers, this is the bridge between training and development, and as content providers, we don't, like as a blogger, for example, we don't necessarily support the new teachers, we're still supporting our level of development. So I have to think about when I'm writing a blog post, I have to remember that people reading that blog post might be brand new, fresh off CELTA teachers, or they might be somebody with 20 years, 30 years experience and, a Delta, a Master's, a PhD, whatever behind them. And I have to be able to create that content so that it works for all of them. So I can't assume knowledge, for example. And that comes back to the basics of ELT that Silvana's talking about, making sure that, for example, if I'm talking about an activity, I don't just assume that the teacher is going to know how to set up that activity. I'll give them a step-by-step guide of, first do this, then do this, then do this. And that then gives them the support to be able to try that activity out in their own classroom, rather than a rough idea of what the activity is, and then they're left to their own devices to work it out, and then it doesn't work because the challenges of the classroom management I haven't supported them with, for example.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Those themes haven't really changed for newer teachers. With the proviso that online teaching has become so much more prolific, and I think that's a major shift, isn't it? Otherwise, the content and the pedagogy, such as it does need to shift for online teaching, hasn't changed that much.
No, and I think that was one of the things that I noticed when I first started doing online CELTA courses as a trainer. When I did my first course in July 2020, I remember right at the beginning trying to work out how the criteria were similar or different for online teaching versus face-to-face teaching. And what I realized is that actually the criteria are pretty similar. It's just how you manifest some of those criteria. For example, monitoring a room full of people versus monitoring people in breakout rooms. You still need to have particular skills to monitor. They're just very slightly different skills. If it's a group of, if it's a room of 10, 15, 20 people versus if it's 10, 15, 20 people in separate breakout rooms, for example. I think the other big thing at the moment is also about AI and the fear of AI from a lot of people, the fear of not knowing how to deal with it in the classroom. So I think a lot of people are trying to find ways to exploit it in a good way, but also ways to work with students on AI. And that's a super current topic over the last 6 months or so. I think if 12 months ago you'd said you'll be really interested in AI, most teachers would probably have laughed at you, but it's completely unavoidable now since ChatGPT became so accessible to people.
In what ways are you using that in the classroom, can I ask?
Not at all. I don't use it at all. But that's partly because I'm not really teaching at the moment. So I'm running my Delta courses. But for the first time the other day, the trainee did ask me permission first. I'm on a DipTESOL course. I'm running a DipTESOL course, and one of the trainees asked me if it was okay to write a text that the students could read out to practice a particular pronunciation sound using ChatGPT. So that's the first time that I've seen that in an assignment, for example, and it was a great text. It was perfect for practicing that sound, for example. So I've seen lots of ideas for other people using it, but I'm not using it at all at the moment. Because I think for the things that I'm doing, it's not immediately relevant or necessary, but I absolutely imagine over time that I will kind of creep into what I'm doing.
And what new areas do you foresee in the future of teacher development? And as an addendum to that, how will teachers need to adapt in terms of their development and what they do, what they focus on?
Yeah, so I think it will continue. So I think it will continue to be about different platforms rather than specifically new areas, because as Silvana said, we still have these basics of ELT that we need to support people with, that people need to develop. And so I think the growing platform for PD at the moment is WhatsApp, and particularly in, for example, in Africa, in rural Asia, where it's harder for people to get access, reliable internet access, WhatsApp is allowing people to access teacher development and support and provide and create those communities of practice. And I think that's something that we're still quite at the beginning of. Although WhatsApp's been around for a few years, I think the pandemic again gave that kick to help encourage teachers or to support each other and to join those communities. And WhatsApp and other apps like Telegram or Signal, they gave people the opportunity to join those communities. I think technology is going to continue to evolve, but I don't think that's necessarily a new area. It's the same area with different tools. And I think that's largely true, that it's whatever we're doing, it's we're evolving. It's unusual that a completely new area will come in. So I think mental health and well-being is an example of that, that 10 years ago there was very little recognition of that, and that's become a huge area. Or you mentioned diversity and inclusion as well. Again, I think that's an area that should have been around for a long time. It has been around on a very low level, but the awareness has massively grown. The same with the environment as well. The awareness has massively grown, but it's difficult, I think, to predict a big shift or a big area. I think it's going to be about evolving all the time. And so then in terms of how teachers need to adapt in terms of teacher development, I think it's about having curiosity and having an interest in what the new things are or what the changes are, rather than it doesn't have to be a sudden shift. It's something that you can do gradually if you stay interested, if you stay in these communities, if you see what the discussions are, if you ask questions yourself, if you see what your students are doing, you'll be able to adapt. Because it's like, it's a metaphor again, it's like the frog in hot water. If you just jump in, you're not going to be able to do it. But if you gradually increase the temperature over time, you'll be able to adapt. Hopefully you won't die at the end of it,
I
though.
like that metaphor better, but I don't want to be a frog in hot water, not knowing that I'm
Absolutely.
heating up all the time either.
I think that's the thing is, if you'd asked me when I started blogging where I saw myself in 10 years' time, there is no possible way I could have told you that I would be a SELTA trainer, that I'd be a director of studies, that I would be involved in IATEFL, that I would be volunteering. I had no idea. But those things all grew gradually by my participation in the conversation, by my asking questions, by seeing what questions other people were asking, and just by always being curious about what's coming, what's the next thing, how can I be interested in, how can I learn from it? And I think that open-mindedness, that curiosity will always stand people in good
Right,
stead.
good advice. So say there's a teacher, whether they be new or not, who's new to social media, if such a person exists. But I mean, there are still people out there.
Absolutely.
Where would you advise them to go? Where would you advise them to start, whether it be on LinkedIn, Twitter, or something else?
Yeah, so I think with social media, it's always about which social media are you already comfortable on. So I think finding the communities on the platform or platforms that you're already comfortable on is the way to start, rather than going off to a completely new platform and trying to learn both the platform and the community at the same time. So wherever you are, if you whichever social media platform you're on, whichever or if you prefer WhatsApp, for example, if you search for ELT teacher community on that platform, you will find it. And if you want to join a new platform that you probably that you may not have been on before, then I would say that LinkedIn is the platform where lots of things are happening now. And with LinkedIn, I think it's about building as broad a community as you can. So connecting to lots and lots of people finding groups like the ELT Professionals group that's been set up by David Dubelweis that has nearly 90,000 members, I think, but also following groups like TDSIG, like IATEFL, and looking at who their followers are as well, building up your community. But then it's okay to be a lurker, I think, as well, especially at the beginning, so that you're just reading the conversations and things. But the seismic shift in your own professional development will come when you start to join in the conversations, when you start to add comments, when you start to ask questions, because that's when, as in any other aspect in life, we learn by communicating, we learn by taking part in conversations, and we learn by being challenged as well. So when I write a blog post about something that's potentially interesting or controversial in some way, I learn so much more from the conversation that happens as on the basis of that blog post than I necessarily do from the initial blog post. But I learn something from trying to put my ideas into words to be able to communicate them to somebody else, because I have to think, what do I actually think about this? It becomes less nebulous. It becomes more concrete as I realize what I think. And that's true of recording something like this podcast as well. Like if I'd sat down to write the ideas, I would probably come out with something slightly different to what I'm doing on the spot as I'm talking to you. But I wouldn't necessarily have had concrete ideas about any of these things, you know, a week ago, until I start talking about it, until I start thinking about it, until you ask me questions and feed in more ideas. So I think whichever social media platform you're using, or in face-to-face contexts as well, at conferences, you know, if you go to a webinar, ask questions and see what feedback you get, and that will really push your development.
If I may ask a follow-up question, what's the mechanism for that initial content, conversation, and ongoing conversation, questioning, self-questioning, questioning others? How does that translate for you into kind of sustained development in collaboration with others in the classroom, and a shift in classroom practice?
Yes. So when I first started writing on my blog, I was generally sharing activities that I tried out in the classroom, and it was kind of a, here's something I've tried, maybe it'll work for you. I started getting feedback on some of those activities. So people would comment and go, I've tried it too, here's something that I've done to vary it, and then I might try out that variation, for example. So that was as an early career kind of, in inverted commas, survival teacher. So I was really focused on the activities, or I could write something on there that said, you know, I'm having real trouble with teaching X, for example, with teaching writing. And then people could give me suggestions, which I could then try out in the classroom. Over time, as my career has developed, the conversations that people are having have given me ideas about different areas that I can explore in my teaching or in my ELT career. So for example, getting into materials writing was something that I wouldn't have considered had I not been able to learn from materials writers through the online community, and then later by being part of the materials writing SIG, because I'm on the committee now and going to their events. And so it kind of opened up my eyes to different things that I could do as part of my teaching, as part of my career. And then that fed back into the classroom, because, for example, the quality of my materials got better. Like super simple things like just numbering the questions in an exercise just made it easier for the learners to use. And then over time, the conversations that I have made me think much more deeply about my teaching, about what am I doing to help my students, and how does this learning help teachers to help their students as well? How can I, as a trainer now, how can I communicate good teaching practice that will help those teachers help their students? But it has to be part of a community. It has to be part of a, this is something I've tried, what have you tried? where is the thinking right now? You know, what are the trends? Understanding what the themes are, that then drives my curiosity, drives my interest. It's, you know, if lots of people are talking about something, I might go, oh, maybe that's something that's worth me learning about, for example. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's,
And as the last question, what would you say a teacher's priorities should be in terms of teacher development over the next decade or so? If that's a bit too long, then sure.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to make that a sweeping statement because every teacher is going to be different and every context is going to be different. And I mentioned how different my own career was 10 years ago. I've only been a professional, an ELT professional, for 15 years. So a decade ago, I was still a teacher without any of the other strings to my bow. So I think your priorities always have to be, what are you most interested in? Because if you're not interested in it, you're not going to do anything with it. And what is going to be most beneficial to your students or to the people that you're working with? So if you haven't got those kind of classroom foundations down about classroom management or having a range of different activities or being able to hand over control to the students, then those should be your priorities. But if you've already got those foundations, then investigating whatever it is that you're teaching. So if you're doing a lot of teaching listening, for example, exploring teaching listening and learning about different ways of doing it, about different things to focus on. It can also be about looking for the gaps in your teaching knowledge. So a lot of people, for example, are frightened of teaching pronunciation, or they have no idea about where to start with pronunciation, or they might even ignore it. They might feel it's not important. And when you realize that being able to work on a learner's pronunciation, firstly, is one of the things that learners very often want. They want more pronunciation work, but also that being able to work on pronunciation supports learners reading, writing, listening, and speaking. And it's kind of an easy win, in inverted commas. You can do a little bit and have a huge impact on your learners. Once you realize areas like that, then you suddenly go, I need to learn a lot more about teaching pronunciation. So I think it's that. It's about noticing where the gaps in your knowledge are, noticing where the conversations are in the community, and using that to drive your curiosity, to drive your interest in terms of the next thing that you want to develop. And also being aware that hopefully everybody who's listening to this is going to have a long and happy ELT career. There's going to be lots of things you want to develop over time. There's going to be lots of different things that will interest you. So don't worry if you can't do it all now. Pick one thing that you're interested in, work on that, pick another thing, work on that, pick another thing, work on that, and just keep going. And that's one of the joys of being in ELT, I think, is that there's always something new to learn.
Good advice. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us, Sandy, and look forward to seeing you in Brighton iTEFL next year, hopefully.
Thank you so much, Christian.
Thank you.
So thank you to Sandy and Christian for that interview. If you want to know more about Sandy, then I recommend you have a look at her website, sandymillan.wordpress.com. You'll be able to find out more about her many, many activities there, her self-published books, her courses that she runs. And she's just released a framework for ELT materials writers. So if you have an interest in materials, I would highly recommend you go and have a look at that as well. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, she is a podcaster, and I have a bias here in that we do another podcast together called the TEFL Commute podcast. So Sandy is one of the presenters and I'm the producer of that show. So take a look for that podcast. Obviously, I'm going to recommend the TEFL Commute podcast as well. Just before you go, I want to just give you a quick reminder about a couple of TDC activities. Our PCE will be coming up soon at the iTEFL conference in Brighton. We haven't announced our speakers yet, but it's coming very soon. So make sure you take a look at our social media and stay in touch. And just a reminder that for members, we released our TDAJ, our academic journal, at the end of 2023. If you haven't gone over to the members area of the IETFL website yet, then go ahead, go there and you can download it, and it will make for some fascinating reading. So that brings us to the end of this episode of DeveloPod. Don't forget to stay in touch with TDSIG. We're on all the social media platforms, including Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find us by searching for IETFL TDSIG. So until the next episode, thank you for listening. My name is James Taylor, and we'll see you again on DeveloPod.